Support for this podcast and the following message come from Allianz Travel Insurance. An unexpected medical emergency can cost you. It can cost you even more when you're traveling abroad. Protect your trip at AllianzTravelInsurance.com.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. There is an art to the perfect prank. You don't want to be too mean. You don't want to hurt anyone. But some confusion, maybe a little anger? Sure, those are fine. My guest Johnny Knoxville is an expert prankster. He's been pranking people for decades. He's a true master of his craft. Knoxville has been the center of the Jackass universe for 23 years. Jackass is a group of, I guess we'd call them performers, who basically do the craziest stuff they can think of on camera. Sometimes they do something crazy in public, and it's a prank. Sometimes they do something crazy to each other. That's for sure a prank. And a lot of times they just sign up to be tortured in some weird way, which maybe is a self-prank. I'm not sure. The Jackass crew have done things like cover their entire body with bees. Their entire body. They've gotten tattoos in off-road vehicles, like while they're driving off-road. We're talking about 20-plus years of Johnny Knoxville putting his body on the line. All the way through Jackass Forever, which was in movie theaters last year. Knoxville and his pals always married real danger to the strange and surreal. One time, one of them tied an end of a fishing line to a crooked tooth in his mouth, and then the other end to the bumper of a Lamborghini. I don't even like thinking about it, but there's something beautiful there. Anyway, it turns out that you can't really do that forever. Knoxville almost died making Jackass Forever, like for real almost died. And so he's had to face down what his life is and what his career is without the smashing and the crashing. And the answer for Johnny Knoxville was pranks. His new show is called Prank Panel. He's joined by his sometime Jackass colleague Eric Andre and Gabourey Sidibe, who brings both gleeful humor and the gravitas of her Best Actress nomination. Regular people come before this tripartite panel and pitch pranks on people they love, spouses and siblings and friends and coworkers. The pranks that the panel likes, they do, generally after scripting it out and adding at least one giant explosion. I'm going to play a clip from Prank Panel, but I do want to let you know two things about the interview that will follow. Number one, we are going to talk a lot about bodily harm, because it would be very hard to talk to Johnny Knoxville about his career without talking about bodily harm. Also, we taped this interview before the SAG-AFTRA strike. If you want to support workers affected by that strike, you can go to entertainmentcommunity.org. So, let's get into it. In this clip from the Prank Panel, the judges have just accepted a pitch from a guest named Susanna. She wants to prank her son Nathan. He is terrified of clowns. The panel accepts the prank, and Johnny explains to Susanna what they have planned.
You look great.
There we go.
Oh, my goodness. That's you're going to scare him so bad?
Well, I still don't know how it's going to go down. Like, am I supposed to go in the room?
Well, I'll show you.
We still figure it out.
We're going to, like, in a few minutes, we're going to blow a light in the room to really scare him.
Okay.
And then we're going to have this painting fall over there, and there's going to be blood behind it.
Oh,
it's really going to scare him. And we have Josh the clown under the bed, and Josh is going to jump out and go, wah! And scare him and chase him out into the hall.
Okay.
And when he chases him out in the hall, that hallway, it's going to be filled out of every room, clowns chasing him down the hallway, into the elevator. And they're going to chase him downstairs, and you're going to be on the first floor, and you're going to do the final, wah, to scare him. So he's going to be freaked out.
Okay.
Johnny Knoxville, welcome to Bullseye.
It's really tough to, thank you. It's really tough to follow a prank without, you know, video accompaniment.
Well, I mean, your exposition is so incredible there.
Well, I'm excited because it was actually a reversal prank, and she thought she was pranking her son who's scared of clowns. So she's going to be sitting next to me in the control room watching it on video. So I was trying to tell her what she thought was going to happen, but we had other things planned.
You're an executive producer of the show. This is in part your show. How did you think about what kind of prank plays on this show? How did you think about how you managed the tone?
Well, you mean for network television?
Well, for network television and just in general, like you've made a huge career doing pranks, but you've also made a huge career doing pranks in a world where the rules are we're all good friends and we're pranking each other, right? Which is one kind of prank tone.
But we also, there is a different tone when we're pranking the public on Jackass as opposed to when we're pranking the guys. Like when I'm pranking the public, I don't like making the general public, I don't like gotcha pranks where someone looks like an or I don't like showing up the general public. I don't touch the general public, you know, but with the guys, I can touch, I can just destroy them. So it's a tone, it's totally different. And in that it holds over, we're pranking, even though it's pranking someone's loved one or coworker on the prank panel, I don't want to, it's not gotcha prank or making them look ridiculous or the butt of the joke, but I do like to confuse them. You know, and
confusing really seems like your passion in the, like with a lot of Jackass pranks or the pranks that are in Bad Grandpa or those kinds of things, like the thing that seems to animate you is what's the most ridiculous thing we can put on camera and in public.
Yeah, I grew up a big fan of cartoons. Especially with my stunts, they're cartoony by nature. But even some of the pranks, you know, like the giant hand in Jackass 3D, that was a cartoon. And I like, you know, Tremaine, and they're like, you know, life isn't a cartoon. I'm like, I don't know.
What do you think constitutes success in a prank?
Success in a prank is all based on the reaction you get. You can have a prank that the idea is just so-so, and if you get an outrage, like, for example, in Bad Grandpa, that was a little scripted. The pranks were all real, but there was also, it was scripted, the story. And for the story, we need a shot of me pulling in a diner and hitting this big ceramic pig. And the kid wasn't even in the car. We had a dummy for the kid. And that was the whole shot. I just pull into the diner, hit the pig, and then walk out. Get out of the car and walk in. It was no prank. Well, as soon as I pulled in, I hit the pig. This angry guest from the diner came out and started yelling at me. And it's one of my favorite pranks I've ever done because he was so angry. And I just... And it was perfect because whatever I said would only make him angrier. And it got to the point where I could feel, I could tell he was going to hit me. And we can't have anyone hit us because we don't want anyone to hurt their hand. You know, and then it's like, it's not funny if the person we're pranking gets hurt.
Right.
I don't care personally about getting hit, but, you know, we don't, tonally, it sinks us. So I love playing the game of getting someone as mad as they possibly can be and then taking them down and then making them angry again and taking them down. And that went on for 45 minutes. Just me and that guy. It ended up in the movie too. So, and that was all based off the reaction.
Does it have to be a negative reaction?
No, because if you confuse someone, that's not a negative reaction. Sometimes people get angry, and depending on their anger, I can sometimes use that you know, for comedy's sake. So a lot of times it's not a negative reaction, but sometimes you can make a negative reaction work. It just depends.
What to you is the essential difference between a stunt and a prank?
I don't go to the hospital on pranks. I end up in the hospital on stunts. You know, it's a stunt is why I'm putting...
I mean, the pranks that you've done are often, like, really physical. Like, it's not
right, yeah.
It's not just stuff that happens on candid camera. Often it involves something crazy happening that could actually be dangerous.
Well, if it's on the, if it's directed at the guys, yeah, sometimes people have, you know, gotten hurt when we're doing pranks on the cast. But we try to gauge it what's reasonable, and not that I don't know if we're the greatest judges of what's reasonable. But stunts are just me physically putting it on the line. And pranks are something different, you know? You're going for more direct laughs with the prank. A stunt can be funny, or it can be like, oh, no, I hope he's okay. Can be shocking. Can a stunt can be a number of things, but pranks, hopefully, they're funny.
Do you get enough of the excitement that you get from doing something really stupid and dangerous from putting on a grand prank where in the end you don't want to make anybody feel too bad?
Absolutely, because a stunt, I mean, you got to have the crew there to, you know, capture it and set it up. And but that seems to be, to me, a more intimate affair. Pulling off a prank, everyone, there are 80 to 90 people that have been working on that prank for weeks. And to finally pull it off, everyone has to be at their best, and to pull it off, it's really exciting. It's very exciting. You know, you just want to go around and hug people afterwards. It's a different feeling than a stunt, because if a stunt, a lot of times if a stunt goes really good, i.e. bad, they whisk you away in the back of a car or ambulance. So,
but I mean, you've done that once and then done it again many times. You know what I mean?
Done like, which?
You've done something that led you to be whisked away.
Oh, sure.
And like Steve-O was on this show, your colleague in Jackass.
Yes, my colleague.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
You know, he'll very sincerely sort of meet you in the eyes and say, I remember if it was in the so many words, but like, he's just like, yes, I will do anything to have people pay attention to it. And my greatest pleasure is to think of the greatest of that. Right. And
everything but bungee jumping, but go ahead and finish your story. I'll tell you.
And look, you're a performer, you're an actor, you know, you moved to LA to be in show business. I'm not suggesting that, you know, getting attention isn't part of the interest for you of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But the impression that I get hearing you talk about or reading you talk about doing the big Jackass stunts is that it is like almost a physical need. Like it is like the feeling that you get from putting yourself in insane danger, doing something crazy with a goal in mind, where pulling it off potentially means, as you said, sometimes something going good means it went horribly.
Mm-hmm.
That experience is what's exciting to you. Like getting the footage is what means that you did it right. But I don't get the impression that the main thing is showing off.
No, but I mean, there is that aspect. I'm not doing it in a vacuum. I'm doing it in front of a camera. But I do think that the whole process with the outcome figured into it, which you don't know how it's going to come out. You kind of slip into magical thinking and get overly optimistic, which, you know, half overly optimistic stuntman is, you know, it's pretty entertaining to watch. I think, lose the plot, I lost the plot. I got a little addicted to it. I don't know how to explain it. I was more concerned with the outcome of the footage than I was with how it was going to come out for me. Yeah. So, but with that said, I'm not sitting here crying about it. It's something I went through and something I did to myself. And I realized that, you know, may not have been the healthiest thing in hindsight, but I'm doing okay. You know.
Your "I'm doing okay" facial expression was like one side of your mouth up a little, one side of your mouth down.
Well, I was looking at you and your face is so somber and I was like, oh no. So I was reacting to that.
It's okay for my face to be somber. This is National Public Radio, dude. It's okay to be sincere on my show. You're allowed to. I encourage it sometimes, even. More still to come with Johnny Knoxville after a quick break. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor FX, presenting Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Acorn TV. Acorn TV isn't just good, it's brilliant. With exceptional television from around the world, their romances are more charming, their mysteries cozier, their noirs more gripping, and their comedies cleverer. More clever? Oh, you get it. Acorn TV is brilliant stories told brilliantly. Visit acorn.tv for a 30-day free trial with promo code NPR. So, in a nutshell, Acorn TV. Brilliant.
On this week's episode of Wildcard, actor Chris Pine tells us it's okay not to be perfect.
My film got absolutely decimated when it premiered, which brings up for me one of my primary triggers or whatever is like not being liked.
I'm Rachel Martin. Chris Pine on how to find joy in imperfection. That's on NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, the game where cards control the conversation.
I'm Yucky Jessica.
I'm Chut Crudsworth.
And this is Terrible,
a podcast where we talk about things we hate that are awful.
Today we're discussing Wonderful, a podcast on the Maximum Fun Network.
Hosts Rachel and Griffin McElroy, a real-life married couple.
Yuck!
Discuss a wide range of topics. Music, video games, poetry, snacks.
But I hate all that stuff.
I know you do, Yucky Jessica.
It comes out every Wednesday, the worst day of the week, wherever you download your podcasts.
For our next topic, we're talking Fiona, the baby hippo from the Cincinnati Zoo.
I hate this little hippo.
I'm Jesse Thorne. You're listening to Bullseye. My guest is the expert prankster and performer Johnny Knoxville. His new show is The Prank Panel. Let's get back into our conversation. It feels to me like the footage piece of it is it gives you a way to say that you won and you did it while also suffering horribly. You know what I mean? Like you can have some, some non-suffering, some self-flagellation, but you can also have that it worked feeling.
Well, if it worked, we're probably going to do the stunt again. But if it failed, we got it. Also, when we're shooting, I would become obsessed with shooting to the point where on a couple of films they had to have an intervention to get me to stop because I didn't want to stop. I'm a little obsessive.
Like you didn't want to stop
shooting,
performing, like doing stuff in front of the camera.
Yeah, like just shooting on the second film.
Like here's another idea.
Shoot
here's
5 days
thing,
a week,
yeah.
And then I'm like, I want to get a couple of guys in with a camera, and I want to go shoot things this weekend. And they would just literally film me running into stop signs, all weekend.
I would imagine that one of the hardest parts of doing that job is that in order to go in the pen with the bull, literally or metaphorically, right, do you have to enter that state that you described, which is like this kind of weird optimism, sort of self-denial, sort of like weird, a little hyped up, let's go. All the possibilities are endless, ideas are good kind of state.
Yeah.
And not only is that just like hard to get out of in general, especially if getting horribly hurt means that you did a good job.
Yes, because it becomes your outlook at that point. You just, once you get into that state, for me, it was hard to get out of that state. It was hard to turn it off. Yeah, it's the damnedest thing.
Right, because, I mean, if you turn it off, you got to figure out how to turn it back on again.
It's hard.
That's the weekend. That's the reason you can't have a weekend.
So
you know what I mean?
I think I went for years in that state. And, I'm just coming down now, I hope.
I mean, you must have had people that you love tell you to stop before.
Yeah, sure. But I couldn't hear it. I remember the first thing I did was for Big Brother. One of the first things, probably the first thing, that tested self-defense equipment on myself. And
Big Brother magazine.
Yeah, Big Brother magazine, I'm sorry. And, you know, I got pepper sprayed, stun gun. I shot myself in the chest with a bulletproof vest. And my sister came to town from Tennessee. And I was really happy with the footage. And I'm like, Lynn, look at this. And she didn't like it at all. And I wasn't expecting that. But I should have been. Because basically she's just watching her little brother hurt himself. And especially with the gun, that could have ended terribly. And I'm like, okay, I get that. But at the time I wasn't, And through the years, people did try to get me to stop, but I wasn't ready. Yeah, I'm not sure that I even thought that I could have. But the last concussion I got with the bull in Jackass Forever, it stuck with me like no concussion before. It scrambled my brains for months. It took me 6 months. It was bad. A year it took me to feel like myself again. And thank God, because usually after a head injury, after a year is wherever place you're at after a year is where you're going to be. So I had to go on antidepressants. my brain was just playing tricks on me. And it got worse and worse. Like, first month, you know, foggy. Second month, still foggy. My cognitive skills were, I took some tests. They were not good. But the fourth and fifth, it was just all bad. So, like, yeah, maybe I did the thing. Maybe I've done my time, and I don't have anything to prove. I have kids. So maybe, it was time.
I imagine that part of it is that, you know, your career is so intimately tied to this group of people that you love.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen every kind of outcome happen in that group of people. You know, we talked about Steve-O, like Steve-O had very serious addiction problems.
Sure.
That he's really seems to have engaged really head on. You know, you had a colleague fired from the last movie because he was struggling so bad, just was not able to be healthy in work.
Yeah.
You had one of your collaborators died a decade ago now.
Yeah.
And you also, I'm sure, just had people that were doing okay and wanted to work too. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like every possible kind of outcome. And it's all tied into this, like, the group of you together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So everybody is like weirdly responsible to everyone else.
Yes. Yeah. And I feel that, you know, when we haven't done a movie in a while, the guys have always, they're wanting to do another, but it was me who I'm like, I don't see it right now. I didn't know if we would, but every now and then they get frustrated and I get a big group email. And a few of them were really laying into me. And I can't, and as uncomfortable as that is, I can't let that affect my decision to do another one. Because if I'm doing it for that reason, because everyone's on me, it's not the right reason. I can't succumb to that. I love the guys. They're my family, but to do what we do, you have to really want to do it. You can't go into a stunt halfway wanting to do it, because that's when someone gets really injured. And you're probably going to get hurt anyway, but you have to totally commit. And I only feel like that ever so often, so
I'm like a fan of Jackass. Like, I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
And when I heard you say that you don't want to go into it for the wrong reason, I literally had the thought, trying to figure out in my head, what is the right reason to do this? It's like, I'm not sure. I don't know if I know what the right reason is to.
I do love me and the guys and now girls together, all together as a group. Because it's something I created with my friends. These people weren't strangers. And it's very special to me. And the reaction and laughter that we can bring to people means a lot to me. So the right reason for me was whenever I got that feeling I couldn't get out of my head of, like, because I was always right. I always write ideas. I still write ideas and just mail them to myself. But when I get that itch, I'm like, I got it. Let's go. I have to do this now. We have to shoot these ideas. I feel that to me is a good bellwether of what I need to be doing. Like, I have to get it out of my system. because it becomes all consuming. So, yeah, that's when it's go time.
Is it possible that that is the wrong reason to do it?
No, I don't think so. No, whenever the desire is there and the inspiration is there and the energy is just boiling over, that's when it's time. Because I know we're all together and I know what we can do and what we've done, and I think we can do it again. And I know that it also, when we do it, it creates like a tidal wave of positivity in everyone's life. Our guys, like as we just discussed, have all of us have suffered through things, and are, you know, some are suffering through things. But I think people come to the table with certain things. Some of those things we're going to come up with or without us together. And some of the things were hastened along by all of us together. But at the end of the day, Jackass is what we do.
I've been in the fringes of comedy for a long time.
Me and, too.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say is, like, I really don't think there is anything that, I mean, not even 30 Rock or Cheers or something, Airplane, that comedy people I know agree on as universally and enthusiastically as Jackass.
Oh, thank you.
And it must be funny to, like, be in this position where, at least within this, you know, plenty of opinions vary across the breadth of this great nation on Jackass still. But
sure. Yeah.
But within this community, almost universal reverence. And you've done it by doing, like, the weirdest, most self-destructive, like, it just coming up with the most creative nightmares to endure.
Yes.
You're like, couldn't I just have written that one joke where Alec Baldwin says, never go with a hippie to a second location?
Yeah, it's an odd path, but it's the path I took and we took. And honestly, I don't think I knew how to do it the other way. I found a way to do comedy from a point of view that I not only, you know, had inside of me, but I felt like I can do this. I see a way in. You know, I would have loved to have written for your show of shows, you know, and sat next to Mel Brooks and Larry Gelbart and, you know, Carl Reiner. But this is my version of funny.
Do you feel good about that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they all weren't hits. Not everything we ever, but overall, yeah, I'm proud of what we did and what we could do again if, you know, we ever got the feeling.
If you can figure out what the version of it is that doesn't involve your head at
well,
all.
I would just have to be, I could do pranks and be more behind the scenes like Tremaine, you know, because he was always the coach and I was the player coach. And I guess you'd have two coaches.
Just switch to all prank call format. Just nothing but prank calls.
Yeah. Reminds me of my teen years.
Stick around. More Bullseye around the corner from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This message is brought to you by NPR sponsor Progressive Insurance. You call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. Tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options within your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, an automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy shares why Betterment believes cash can be a strategic choice.
There are times when the market is volatile, when customers are a little nervous about investing. We came to understand that there was an opportunity to introduce cash as part of an investing strategy and to give back yields to the customer.
Learn more about high-yield cash accounts at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance not guaranteed. Cash reserve offered through Betterment LLC and Betterment Securities. Betterment is not a bank.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Johnny Knoxville. He's the co-host of the new reality show, The Prank Panel. It's about pranks. Everyday people come in, pitch ideas to a celebrity panel, and from there, the panel decides if it's a prank that they would like to perform. Then they punch it up and they let it rip in real life. Let's get into the rest of our conversation. Do you think you could be happy being an entertainer where, look, I'm not going to ask you to say anything about this of yourself. I say you're handsome and charismatic enough.
Oh, come on.
To Mario Lopez off into the sunset if you wanted to. You know what I mean? Like, you could literally just say, look, I'm made a long career of being Johnny Knoxville to the point where I'm now pretty famous. I can use that plus these entertainment skills and gifts I have to just do something simple. Do you think that you could do entertainment things that don't involve danger or suffering?
I can do entertainment.
Like, you can, like, what I, when I say can you, what I'm saying is you can. Like, you're capable, in my opinion, as the head of show business.
The president of show business?
Yeah. I think you're fully capable of doing those things. My question to you is, can you, for yourself, can you be comfortable and happy and feel like a productive artist? Or whatever it is that you need to be alive and do your thing, if there's no danger or suffering.
I like to be challenged, right? And I think even with pranks, there's danger involved. Any number of things can go wrong. I just think I need to be challenged, and I don't think that I'm able to just phone it in the rest of a career.
What could possibly challenge you, though, the way literal, imminent physical danger and suffering challenge you?
Failure is a challenge. Whether you're making a documentary or, you know, a scripted film, that's a challenge. Like, you have people that are working for you and you want this thing to continue and be successful. You have people relying on you. You want to make something as great as it could be. And whatever I do, like whether it's been successful or not, I take it inside me and want, you know, and really, I guess, it come back to obsession. I get obsessed with wanting it to succeed. So I think, yes, I can do away. I've wrapped my head around, like, I'm not going to do the bigger stunts anymore where I can't get another concussion. Smaller stunts I'm okay with, you know. Don't care about my wrist or ankle so much. But I know what you're saying. I don't see me phoning it in.
Even if, seriously, Terrence Malick calls you tomorrow, and he says, we're making Thin Red Line 2. I need you to be at the center of it. That's a challenge. That's as big an artistic challenge as there could be, right?
It's a big challenge.
But for someone whose career has been built on confronting literal death, it's a different scale of challenge. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying.
Like the fear of, I mean, you're talking about the challenge of, like, you have people in your employ that you don't want to disappoint, or you don't want to be embarrassed. You don't want to do a bad job. Are those challenges able to sustain you where previously in place you had, I go on camera and almost die?
I don't want to disappoint the people I'm working with, and I don't want to disappoint myself. I'm very hard on myself. So I have no problem with motivation. And my life's not, so say my life's not on the line anymore. That's a good thing. And as weird as that is to say, I do miss it.
I don't believe for a moment that you have a problem with motivation. You're obviously intensely motivated to make work and make art. I guess what I'm wondering is about security, satisfaction, you know, stability, you know, those things.
No, I'm the most, now as I sit before you, I am the best version of myself that I've ever been. I'm the healthiest I've ever been. My line of work, doing what I had to do, I wasn't in a healthy mindset, right? So not only am I the healthiest I've ever been, I'm proud of that. I take pride in that. I'm putting the pride I took, putting my life on the line, I'm putting that in a trunk and putting it up in the attic because that doesn't serve me now. Doesn't serve my kids or my family. I'm okay with that, you know? Of course I'm okay with that.
When I'm preparing for one of these interviews, if they're available, I'll read 20 or 30 or 40 profiles or long-form interviews with the person that I'm going to talk to. And one of the leitmotifs in the ones over the past 5-7 years with you was this kind of like character moment / running gag somewhere in between, which was you saying, well, I've been in therapy for quite some time, but I make sure not to have my therapist address whatever it is that makes me need to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't joking either.
Do you feel like you can or have asked your therapist, maybe we can work on what leads me to dance around in front of a ball?
No, that's been discussed, you know. We're now into the nitty-gritty. It's time. you know, you might look at it and go, well, it's tough to get the toothpaste back in the tube, but I don't feel that way. I feel like I can have a brand new day moving forward and be in the moment, have, you know, care about my self-worth and where I get esteem, give myself a break. You can't beat yourself up. You can. It's tough.
And in your case, you can literally, for example, shoot your own self in the chest.
And have a great career. Or a career. Great is presumptuous. But yeah, it's just the mentally and emotionally beating yourself up. That's what gets you. And sometimes physical, kids.
Well, I'm so grateful for your time and for your incredible work. And
oh, thank you.
I think you deserve to give yourself all the breaks you can manage. Oh, yeah. I think it will only make you stronger. Don't worry.
Thank you.
Johnny Knoxville. His new show is called The Prank Panel. You can check it out streaming now. The pranks are bonkers. The latest Jackass movie was called Jackass Forever. It is both stomach-churning and genuinely amazing. You can rent or buy that pretty much anywhere. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California. At my house, another giant branch fell out of this tree on the sidewalk out front. Anyway, it's a beautiful tree. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our producers are Jesus Ambrosio and Richard Roby. You think I'm old? This is what I talk about. I have my own radio show. I'm just complaining about this tree. Our production fellow at Maximum Fun is Brianna Paz. We get booking help from Mara Davis. Our interstitial music is by DJW, the great Dan Wally. Dan is on Instagram at DJW Sounds, and he posts almost every morning. He'll post a new beat with a little video that he made for it. It's like his morning practice, and it's so cool. So you should go follow Dan on Instagram, DJW Sounds. Our theme song is called Huddle Formation, written and recorded by the Go Team. Thanks to the Go Team. Thanks to their label, Memphis Industries. Bullseye is on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. You can find us in those places. Follow us. We will share our interviews with you there. And I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
This message is brought to you by NPR sponsor, Lisa, in collaboration with West Elm. Discover the new natural hybrid mattress, expertly crafted from natural latex and certified safe foams, designed with your health and the planet in mind. Visit leesa.com to learn more.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell and show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/NPR.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.